us on the web at melvilletrust.org.
For many, a charitable bequest is a unique expression of appreciation. The thoughtfulness of many individual families, like the Levinsons and Fines, has led to planned gifts which help WLRN sustain and grow. Through your will or estate plan, you can name Friends of WLRN as the beneficiary of your estate or a portion of it, providing an enduring legacy of public media for years to come. To learn more about making an impact through planned gifts, call 305-350-7977.
And good afternoon to you. It's Topical Currents. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper is on holiday. And today we're in our At Your Service mode with our pet care edition. Just a couple of facts. Hot summer days can lead to heat stroke, dehydration, and even death for animals. And another fact, in as little as 15 minutes, animals can sustain brain damage, heat stroke, or even death if left alone in a parked car. Because even on a mild day, interior temperatures in a car can quickly reach 100 degrees. So we're now joined by our two regular contributors. First, veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke, owner and lead practitioner of Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Donnie.
And thanks so much for being here. And also with us is Adele Mieres, who specializes in dog and cat training and animal behavior. He heads South Florida's Canine Advisors. Welcome to you.
Good afternoon, Bonnie. Thank you.
Great to have you. So let's look at the dangers of these dog days of summer. How common is heat stroke?
Well, potentially very common. I just heard on the radio as I was waiting for this, it's 88 degrees Fahrenheit now in Miami. So on an 85-degree day, it takes 10 minutes for the interior of your car to climb to 102 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah. In half an hour, it can reach 120 degrees. So basically, any dog is susceptible to heat stroke. It's particularly bad problem here in Miami. It's a problem anywhere where it's hot. Dogs don't have the ability to dissipate heat as well as people. They don't sweat like people, other than some minor sweating in the paws. All they can do is dissipate heat via panting. So if the temperature differential between them and the environment approaches their body temperature of 102 degrees, they cannot dissipate that heat at all.
What about cats?
Cats, similar. Cats don't leave the house as often as dogs.
True.
And I think that's really why we see less of this problem in cats.
Right.
But potentially, if you've got your kitty in a carrier, you just came to see me, you decided to pop by Publix to pick up some food, leaving your cat in the car is a really bad idea, too.
Okay.
When I have my dog with me and I need to nip into Home Depot for an errand, I sling the carrier over my shoulder and take her with.
But I just heard you spoil your cat. But leaving an animal in a car is just not a good idea.
It's never a good idea. There was an awful case just on the news a month ago. A dog trainer, not local, left her dog in a parked car. It was up north somewhere, 75 degrees outside. It was in the shade. She didn't think there would be a problem. She came back to the car in half an hour, found the dog in heat stroke, basically lying on the side, panting, brick red gums. Saliva, very, very tacky, clearly in distress.
Let's go through some of the signs of heat stroke. What are they? You're just listed a few.
Well,
but
basically, the first thing is clear signs of distress, heavy panting, excessive thirst, glazed eyes, sometimes vomiting, diarrhea, bright brick red tongue, gums, staggering, seizures, excessive drooling, unconsciousness. Clearly distressed. The thing to really be aware of is that in no time at all this can happen. And by the time you see the clinical signs, your dog has already suffered quite considerably to get there.
Okay. And could they have sustained permanent damage already?
Potentially, yes. That being said, of course, the first thing to do is to cool your dog, throw some water on him, her, get the AC going, and get your dog to a vet ASAP. If it's after hours, get your dog to an emergency vet, because there's medication we can give to minimize the permanent effects of heat stroke.
So how quickly does one need to act? I mean, how much time are we talking about?
Not much. I was actually supervising one of the local events in this area is the Venetian Pool Swim. Once a year, they do a doggy swim at the end of their season. And a large breed dog collapsed, heat stroke. And literally, we had close, immediate access to ice-cold water. No disrespect to Venetian pools. It's crystal clear, but by heck, it's cold. A little bit of ice and basically wet the pads underneath the armpits, underneath the leg pits, throw some water on the head. Basically, you don't really want to dip them in water because then you've got potential hypothermia, shock, and so forth. But basically, dousing them with water and putting cool things like ice packs under their arms and legs, arms, front feet, and yeah, occupational hazard. And basically, try to revive them, try to bring them back, so to speak, because they are almost in a comatose state, and you've got to basically get them conscious again. And unfortunately, you still need to get them to a vet. And the beauty of having an air-conditioned car is you can cool them and transport them at the same time.
So if you don't have the water, the ice, but you do have just the air-conditioned car, is that enough just to get them to the vet?
It's not ideal. Yeah. Everyone has access to something. Can of pop or something. So, I mean, if you're out in this heat without water, we really need to talk.
All right.
But basically, moisture will certainly help. If not, AC is better than nothing, but that makes the need to get attention even better. And I would say that perhaps if you've got access to a car but no water, well, get to water first.
Okay. Yeah. So there's the advice. Adele, you want to say something?
Yeah, my experience personally in having to cool dogs down, especially after doing a lot of protection training in the heat, for example, or seeing people even that are jogging with their dogs and already seeing distress signs in their dogs, what I have found cools them down the fastest is exactly what Dr. Kupke was saying regarding the armpit area. So if you can put any water or even ice in that area and hold it there for a few minutes, or at least splash some there over a few minutes, we have found it's the fastest way to drop their temperature.
Oh.
You definitely want to put
even
some
more so than the head.
Yeah.
Yep. You want to put some in the head for their own comfort to relieve some of that heat. But as far as actual body heat dropping very quickly, it's usually right in that area, the underbelly and under the armpits. So it's really important that people try to give the dog water at that point because they see the dog so exhausted. But many dogs, they can't even drink. They're so exhausted at that point, they won't even drink at that moment. And they may drink a little bit, and they're not really drinking enough to drop the temperature. Some people, in a panic, especially if they have a hose around, will put that hose down the dog's mouth, and oftentimes can choke the dog at a time that the dog's already distressed. It's important that both with this, or if you're washing poison from things like a toad, that you do it from the back of the mouth and from the side. And just kind of the gums is really what you want to cool down, so you're not looking to stuff the dog with a bunch of water at that point. Okay. To try to cool his system.
Well, I see we have calls, and I'm going to give out the number, and we're going to get to our calls, but we want to move on to the other topic, which goes hand in hand with summer, and that's dog bites, which can be caused by aggressive animals, or can be given by aggressive animals. So we'll talk about what causes it, what can be, and how it can be exacerbated. And let's begin with some of the most common reasons for aggression.
Well, again, it's something we see a lot of here. I was doing some research for this part of the show, and I came up with several important issues. Puppy mill dogs, they're bred for looks. They're not bred for character. So that's one issue. Lack of proper socialization is another. I found that with my own puppy. We're all very keen to socialize our puppies, but when they get to be adolescents, it's a lot harder because now they're trying to push their own boundaries and explore beyond their limited horizons, and that can often give rise to training issues. This is when a lot of people will give up on a dog and consign them to a less socialized environment, like sticking them in the yard or in the garage, which of course is like putting gasoline on a fire and creating a nightmare that could have been nipped in the bud if it had been addressed earlier. failure to take a leadership role, I think, is the most common one. Adele can elaborate on this, but in my experience, one of the most important things right there is food, not free feeding, but by making sure that your pet sees you as the source of the food. You give foods in a meal, put it down for 20 minutes, pick it up, make sure the pet sees you eat first, even if it's just nibbling on a candy bar. And by seeing us as the food providers already establishes us as a leadership position, which means they're looking to us to guide their behavior.
So a lot of it is like with children. I mean, setting boundaries, setting parameters,
right,
taking a leadership role as
right,
a parent.
And establishing that very quickly. Another issue is how we greet our dogs. A very common mistake we all make is we come home and we immediately collapse onto our knee and say, "Oh my goodness, I'm so glad to see you." My wife is probably laughing at me right now. That is the way a follower greets a leader. So you're actually relating to your dog by going back to the pack, so to speak, in the dog's eyes, whereas in reality, you should be the one greeted by the dog.
Oh.
So what I try to do is I'll go home, I'll let my dog out of the crate, ignore her for a minute, and then she comes to me, and that's when we
So you don't
reconnect.
Go to them. Okay,
no.
And Adele, what were you going to...
Those are some really important points. You know, one of the greatest causes of aggression, and generally in dogs, is tying them up. I'm currently working in a case in Miami Shores where the dog had all sorts of aggression issues, really more confidence issues and anxiety issues, a lot of it stemming from being tied up. And it is one of those methods that oftentimes, like Dr. Kupke was saying, people may resort to, such as putting the dog away in a room or putting the dog outside so that the dog does not interact, or tying the dog up. Tying the dog up also gets the dog to have very high anxiety when they feel pressure on that leash. So it's important that that's noted and not done ever.
All right, we're going to keep talking about aggression and take calls from Kathy. You're up next, Kathy, so stay with us. It's Topical Currents. We're at your service, and we are going to start taking your calls and emails. The email is radio@wlrn.org. We're with Dr. Ian Kupke, a veterinarian from Sable Chase Animal Clinic, and Adele Mietes from South Florida's Canine Advisors. Let's take a short break, and we'll be right back.
This is 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM. Donna Klein Jewish Academy in Boca Raton is Palm Beach County's only K-12 Jewish community day school and is now accepting applications for the 2013-2014 academic year. Tours are available. Information online at dkja.org.
You can plan a getaway weekend to the Florida Keys August 23rd through August 25th and take advantage of the third annual Museum and Attractions Weekend brought to you by WLRN and the Monroe County Tourist Development Council. 21 museums and attractions from the Upper Keys to Key West offer special entry to WLRN listeners who present the admissions flyer. A list of participating venues and attractions can be found at WLRN.org. Click on the Florida Keys and Key West Museum Weekend banner to print out the weekend pass.
Hi, I'm Steve Roydstein, and what I really love about North Miami is its diversity. A block from here, there's like a great Cuban place, and a block away from that, there's an amazing Haitian restaurant. So it's almost like being able to travel around the world without leaving your little city. And actually, right next to us is the supermarket. The produce department is like, there's three different kinds of malanga, and most people don't even know what malanga is. You're listening to WLRN 91.3.
Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you. We're with veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall and Adele Mietes of South Florida's Canine Advisors. And we're talking about heat stroke, summer days, and aggression. Let's talk to Kathy in Coral Springs. Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a little 5-pound Yorkie Maltese mutt that I adopted last year, and he's wonderful. I have two quick questions. One is, he's very protective of me, and especially when he's on the leash, we'll go out to an outdoor restaurant, and he'll go after and bark at a Great Dane. He doesn't care. He just goes nuts when he sees other dogs but mostly when he's on the leash. He's okay in a dog park. So I'd really like to handle that. And the other thing is, I need to get his, I guess I need to get his teeth cleaned. He's three, they think. And being so little, are there any special risks or things I need to be worried about if he has to be sedated?
Well, if I may address the teeth part, you know, dental health is very, very important to all dogs, just like it is with people. It's the number one cause of organ system failure in dogs because of the bacteria getting into the bloodstream from untreated dental disease. And unfortunately, your small dogs tend to get dental disease more often. Things that can set you up for dental disease include feeding soft food, but a lot of it is genetics. A lot of it is just that this tiny dog is going to have a lot less enamel protection in their teeth than a big dog, which is why I've seen six-year-old labs that have never needed their teeth cleaned, and I'm doing dentals on one-year-old Yorkies.
Mm-hmm.
The important thing to do is to make sure that you get your dog's pre-anesthetic safety checked by doing blood work to make sure that it is safe to put them under anesthesia. And it's also important to ask your veterinarian what kind of anesthesia they're using. There's not all anesthesias are safe. Adele was just telling me a good friend of his nearly lost a dog under anesthesia. It happens, and not all anesthetic incidents are anybody's fault. It's just like driving. Someone on the road has a problem with a car, even though you drive safely. But ultimately, it's worth getting your dog checked out, make sure that they're safe to be put under anesthesia, and if your dog is, then definitely get those teeth fixed. In terms of aggression, I think Adele, I think you probably can elaborate.
Sure. Your little Yorkie responding like that to any dog, including the bigger dogs, generally a dog that does that does not see their owner as a leader at that moment. There's a number of things that you can do in daily interaction with your puppy to be able to let them know that you're more of a leader. Feeding, of course, is one of the important guidelines that Dr. Kupke also mentioned, where you add a little bit of control with the food. You let them know there's no free feeding, and you also make them sit and look at you for a few seconds at a time before you give them the okay to go eat. They need to be looking at you and not their food until you give them the okay to go eat. And those are real basic, super easy things to do that really only take a few seconds a day that make a big difference. How you interact with your dog and get your dog's attention and give your dog attention is a huge part of how he is going to pay attention to you when these other distractions like other dogs are around. So there's some work to be done there on daily interactions, but as well, once you do that and you're more of a leader, you will do a little bit more obedience work at a time when we have distractions like other dogs. Get your dog focused on you and get your dog rewarded for that focus that he does on you, as opposed to you perhaps causing a ruckus or pulling on the leash and doing other things that may actually increase the behavior that you don't want anymore when he sees other dogs.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much, Kathy. And this is not a question about aggression, but it's about a mega esophagus. And we're talking to Shiloh in Miami.
Hi.
North Miami. Shiloh, you're up.
Hi. I have a 8-year-old golden retriever, and about 3 months ago, he got aspirated pneumonia, and once the pneumonia cleared up, he now has mega esophagus.
Oh dear.
And it is quite the challenge, to say the least. And wanted to find out if there was any kind of a medication that could help it or anything that I could do to help his situation, because it does not appear to be getting any better. It's just the same, and it's there every day.
Well, hi, Shiloh. Megaesophagus is one of those conditions for which there are a number of causes. It's more of a sign rather than a disease. There's a lot of different things that can cause it. And one common factor with all of the various possibilities is that it is usually related to something that is genetic, which means that your dog was probably predisposed to this problem. There is a disease called myasthenia gravis, which is associated with megaesophagus, but it's definitely something you should see a specialist veterinarian about. I would almost say a veterinary neurologist would be a good start for your dog, because most of the conditions associated with megaesophagus turn out to be neurological diseases, but it's a specialist you need to see.
And tell me again the name of what you said that condition was.
Well, I was biting my tongue saying it because I don't want you rushing to Dr. Google and getting concerned. But it's myasthenia, M-Y-A-S-T-H-E-N-I-A gravis. It's definitely something you need a specialist to diagnose and manage. You know, but it
is. And that was a veterinarian neurologist.
A veterinary neurologist. There are quite a few in town. I know of at least two excellent veterinary neurologists just in the Miami-Dade area.
Okay, Shiloh.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. Thanks so much for calling. Our number is 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Email is radio@wlrn.org. And we have an emailer, Jennifer. My dog loves to visit with every dog she can see when we're walking on a leash. I make her walk by my side, but when she sees another dog, she gets into stalk mode, crouching slightly so she can lunge when she gets close. If I don't let her, she will bark. With the dog. I make her sit and try to distract her with treats, and it works, but I don't always carry treats with me. She's great at the dog park or off the leash. Adele?
Yes. When a dog is doing that crouching type position, oftentimes for one of two reasons, in this particular case, it's the better reason. It's because that dog really wants to go and play with the other dog. So that anxiety starts building up. One of the key things that we do when we work with these types of situations is we provide that trigger or that distraction of another dog at a greater distance. And then we work with getting better at a greater distance and then little by little increasing decreasing the distance between the dog and her dog. Basically, what we want to do there is we want to make sure that we keep the dog's attention on us. Usually little sounds work very well. Turn the dog around, the dog comes, you praise him. Oftentimes the way we hold the leash is going to be really important. We don't want any pressure on the collar. And with a dog like this, we'll oftentimes run the leash under the belly. It's kind of difficult to explain, but very easy to show. We run the leash under the belly as well as on the collar. So we have two points there. As the dog gets a little closer, starts doing the crouching, you can just lift it up and slowly move it to your side and then praise the dog for looking at you again. Moving away, again, praise. Typically, we would do that in a series of times that are very short. Each session might take a minute and a half to 2 minutes. And we start getting an increase in the dog's tolerance around the other dog, ultimately being able to cross and walk by the other dog without her dog having to say hello. What happens is dogs build to doing that because every dog they saw, they were taken in to say hello. So we have to make sure that this dog knows, and not every dog that it sees is it going to say hello to. And then the ones that the owner wants it to say hello to, she'll give them the cue for that.
All right, Jennifer, hope that helps you. And here's one from Peter. I'm a cat lover and want to get closer to my wife's tabby. After 2 years of sharing a home, the cat will now allow me to pet her briefly if we're alone, but will usually cry or hiss if her mom is present. My wife insists that the best way for me to make inroads is to ignore the cat, but I find it very difficult to resist petting her, though she will still often cry, hiss, or lash out at me. Is there a way I can improve my relationship?
Yes, I think so. For one, actually, wife is pretty right there. We got to make sure that, food and attention are two key areas that we show leadership, both with dogs and cats, both being pack animals. And it's really important that he does not give attention to the cat, but rather bring the attention to him. So for example, he can start doing the feeding with the cat, and hopefully they're not free feeding the cat. But he can start doing the feeding with the cat so that the cat can start seeing him as a little bit more of a leader rather than the wife doing it. He may also, through the attention, give his wife some attention. When the cat comes over, move away and earn the cat's interest. When the cat starts coming towards him, then he can put his hand down, looking away. If the cat sniffs, he could do one little pet. As the cat wants more, he moves away. So that
he moves away if the cat wants more?
Correct. He moves away at that point, at the very beginning. And that will get the cat wanting to come to him a little more. He moves a few feet away. He goes down low. Cat comes to him. He gives him a little praise. He steps up and he moves a few more feet away. And you do this a series of times so that the cat always learns to start coming to him. It's positive. He gives him that little praise. He's not going to give the cat a chance to go into that dominant mode by giving him too much attention or attention at the wrong time.
Okay. All right. There you go, Peter. All right. Let's talk to Orlando in Miami, who has behavior modification for crazy dog something or other. Orlando, you're on the air.
Great. Thank you for taking my call. I have a Maltese that's almost 3 years old, and we've never given him any kind of training. And when any stranger comes to the house, he becomes a mad dog. And the same thing for chasing cars and the mailman and anybody else that he can go after. And he has bitten a couple of the neighbors already. We're very concerned. I don't know if there's anything we can do at this point.
There is a lot that you could do. For one, is he neutered already?
Yes, he is.
Okay, how long ago?
We did that almost 8 months ago under the premise that it was going to help his behavior. It really didn't do much for it.
Well, ideally, it helps better, actually, if they do it earlier.
Right.
Typically, definitely before two, but typically before one. Where you're at right now is this dog probably has little to no parameters around the house. Like, you should be able to open your front door, walk out the door, and the dog stays right there, even if other people walk with their dogs by. That's something that's pretty primal, pretty basic. There are other parameters around the house. Like, when you're eating, I'm not sure where that dog is at, but it doesn't seem to me like that dog's going to lay down in his little bed and stay there while you finish eating. And there's probably other parameters, both with the feeding and with the attention, as we've been talking about throughout the show here, that will allow you to show more leadership in daily interaction with the dog. So one of the key things I would look into is definitely look into putting some parameters on that dog and possibly working with a trainer that will work with you and the dog in both showing you the leadership and working with the dog and showing the dog the parameters and obedience that it needs.
Do you recommend or have any trainer that you can, in fact, recommend?
Well,
I am a
dog
trainer.
You're talking to
one. Yeah, I am a dog trainer. CanineAdvisors.com. Letter K, okay. Number 9, advisors.com.
Canine Advisors. All right. Thank you very much.
It's the letter K and the number 9, advisors.com.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Orlando. And, okay, Marilyn is dealing with an end-of-life issue. We're sorry, Marilyn. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. So
yep.
Sorry.
Thank you. I'm sorry, too, and I just wanted to get the expert's advice or insights as to whether this is totally bizarre or just maybe more common than I realize. But as a child, I had some lovely dogs, very well-behaved, and, you know, Cocker Spaniel, Great Danes, etc. But when they started to, you know, decline, they suddenly disappeared. And only years later did I find out that my dad had sent them to the rendering plant. And I don't know if you're very familiar with rendering plants, but in the Midwest, in farm states, you know, that's where you send dead cows and other things to be, you know, boiled down into tallow and that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
Okay. It might be a Midwest thing.
Yeah. I hope so.
I've never heard of that one.
I presume that's because people don't want to talk about it. I mean, I'm embarrassed.
Nowadays, it's done with... it's done with dignity and respect, and I think certain legal requirements as to the minimum one does. Certainly, I don't think that happens now. I think it's a.
If they're a member of your family, if you think about this, would you send a family member to a rendering plant? And that's really the way we would see it with our animals.
Well, me too. But what can I do at this point? years later, I was a child at the time, and there wasn't anything, but I just feel so bad and so guilty about it.
It wasn't your fault. It might be better perhaps to speak with a therapist, a clinical therapist, about this. Nothing wrong with that at all, and they certainly can help with a number of different ways for you to be able to handle this. But it's not your fault. It's not something that you did. It's not something you were even aware of. You just found out later. But to be able to perhaps speak in more privacy, I think a clinical therapist
would be better. Oh, sure. Well, I do appreciate that. But I wish that you folks could possibly explore this a little more, because as best I know now, it is practiced in some parts of the country, and it's just the way it is.
Well, it's good that you brought it to light. And
like,
I think
it's
a lot
part of recycling, they see it as.
It's a different way of looking at animals,
exactly.
I suppose.
Well, me too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay,
thank
you so much, Marilyn.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. And Jose has an aggressive dog and doesn't know what to do. Jose, you're up.
Hi. Yeah. Good afternoon. My name is Jose. I live in Palm Beach. Usually I go to deliver papers or items to different people that I know, and they have a dog, and they have a clear glass on their next to their door, front door, and then when I leave it there, the dog tries to lounge at me, or when he's with the owner, he has it on a leash. The owner tells him not to. He will stay quiet for a second or two, then he will start showing teeth and trying to get at me, especially if I turn my back. I used to be a newspaper boy when I was younger, so I learned to deal with dogs at a young age, but I usually try not to show that I'm afraid of who's boss, but how can he correct that? That doesn't happen, or he bites me when I'm not looking at him. That's it, I will say.
Well, Jose, I think there's a number of questions there. You know, immediately I'm going to just go out and say, you can only do what you can do, so you got to focus on what's within your control in regards to that dog. If the owners are not taking proper care, obviously to get proper training would be one important thing to help those owners. But from your end, man, just go around with some treats, you know, just carry a couple different bags of treats with you. And if the dog is behind the glass, if you come to my house to deliver something, my attack trained Belgian Malinois and my Golden, that's a therapy dog, they're both going to bark at you. And I have them trained like that. So there's nothing wrong with that. However, if they are on the other side of a fence, you got to get close, you may want to just distract them by throwing a few treats over the fence. Let the dog go and sniff out the treats all over the floor. You've tossed 10 or 12 little pieces of treats there, and you're dropping off your box and you're getting out of Dodge, and you don't have a negative interaction. You do this a number of times at the same place that you go to, and the dog is actually going to welcome you coming in. They're going to be looking all over the place for those treats that usually drop whenever you show up. So, and that's really the way that they learn, they get conditioned. As far as when owners are holding the dogs on the leashes, the owners can be tightening up on the leash, because that's what most owners do to try to hold the dog back. That actually causes the dog to move forward. A little thing called opposite reflex theory states that the dog feels pressure in one direction, they're going to pull in the opposite. And that's just a reflex that they naturally have. So
people are like that too.
People are like that too. So yeah. The owner's actions might be getting the dog to be perhaps even more reactive to you. So one of the things I would do is don't rely on the owners. You might advise the owners to maybe look for a trainer, but you can just come up with some treats and just toss the treats down. If there's an owner there, you might ask, does your dog have any allergies? A really good treat to carry around is a lamb-based treats, because most dogs that are allergic to things are good with lamb.
Okay, Jose.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
thanks so much
thank
for
you.
Calling.
You're
okay, right. Bye-bye. And Yolanda, or Yolanda, in Miami, her dog has become incontinent.
Hi. Thank you. I'm calling because my dog is 7-year-old American Bulldog, and all of a sudden now, like once in a while, he'll lay on my bed, and I'll smell something, and all of a sudden I see that he's defecated in my bed, and then he starts peeing in the house. Well, I can't believe it. He's doing, I don't know if it's emotional or physical or what the problem is. He's peeing. He walks and he pees now.
Huh. And 7 years old, you said, yes?
7 years old, yes.
Well, first of all, you know, at seven, it's not old. but it's certainly old enough that there could be an underlying medical reason, and that's the first thing to look at. You know, behavioral is certainly on the list, but I'm sure Adele would agree, first you need to rule out your medical issues, because incontinence...
He put him on antibiotics, but that didn't stop it.
But is it pee or poo, or both?
He's doing both.
Yeah, you see...
He'll poop in the bed. He doesn't even know he's done it. And then he'll like, when I come in, he gets excited and he pees. I could understand that. But then he'll, like, walk and pee. And wow. Even when he goes outside, he walks and he pees. He doesn't do, like, he used to, like, stand and lift his leg. He doesn't even do that anymore. He's so lazy. He won't even lift his leg anymore. Now he just lets it come out.
Is he neutered?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Well, that's one point. Of course, as Adele was saying earlier, neutering earlier is more likely to help behavioral issues. But when you're talking about incontinence, both urinary and fecal, it's important to rule out parasites. It's important to rule out infection. The antibiotics may not have been the right antibiotics to deal with infection, but first of all, you need to get that diagnosed. There's really a lot to it.
So you didn't think it could just be behavioral? Because we used to live in an apartment, and my son would walk them every single day. We have another dog. We have an Australian dog, whatever it is, wild, crazy animal. And it's a sheepdog or a cattle dog, whatever it is. Anyway, and then this one, he's big, and we used to walk them, but now we don't walk them anymore. We just have a big backyard, and we just let him out.
Well, that's actually a useful thing to bring up. And something I've been learning as I've been studying animal behavior, you can't equate running in a backyard to a walk. They're two entirely different exercises. Running in the backyard is just basically what most dogs will do is do a perimeter walk and then lie down somewhere. A proper walk gets the juices flowing. I mean, I started taking my own advice and walking my dog 2 miles a day, and oh my goodness, I feel so much more healthy. Plus, my dog is
not to mention your dog.
Yeah, but my dog is healthier, and what's more, his BMs and basically his bodily function has been regulated because he actually has a period of intense activity. Running in the yard isn't intense activity. One thing that comes to mind right away is look at the volume you're feeding your boy. A lot of dogs are being fed way too much food, and this is one of the reasons why they can't hold their BMs. Another reason is whether or not they're on heartworm preventative. Make sure he doesn't have any parasites.
No, he gets checked for that all the time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Real quick here. If you're laying down with your dog and your dog never even got in a position to poop, and he's laying down and poop is coming out of him, you likely have a physical problem with your dog. There could be anything from Cushing's to Addison's to a number of different glandular type of disorders, something that Dr. Kupke, a licensed veterinarian, will be able to better advise you on. But, you know, a thorough blood test, not just a real basic blood test, but a thorough blood test should be done to be able to rule out all of those things. If you came to me with this dog as a behavioral issue, I'd tell you to do the exact same thing I'm telling you right now. You need to make sure that you get a thorough blood work. We're not talking about you go to a vet and get some antibiotics and see if maybe it was an infection. Get some thorough blood work and really understand what's going on with the internal part of that dog. And if all of that is cleared, and the behavioral end, there's a number of different factors that we can look at, but I would try to clear that first. If pee is coming out very easily, you know, where he's just kind of walking on, his pee is coming out, and the poop's coming out, and he's not even actually hiding it from you, but he is, while he's laying down right there in bed, poop's coming out, I would definitely have a proper blood
Jolanda.
Example.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for calling.
That.
Okay. And it is an At Your Service edition of Topical Currents with Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Mieres of Canine Advisors. We're going to take another short break, and we'll be back and take more of your calls. I know you're holding a long time, but we'll get to you as soon as we can.
This is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM. Thanks for joining us. We're funded by listeners like you and by GEICO, protecting drivers and their families with insurance coverage for over 75 years. More at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO. We're also funded by All Air of South Dade, offering air conditioning solutions and service in Miami-Dade County. For more information or to schedule an appointment, you can simply dial **COOL from your cell phone. That's **2665 and send.
This summer, you can get in bed with the arts during the WLRN Theater League of South Florida Summer Theater Fest, a tri-county collaboration of youth, community, and equity theater. More than 100 events, including play readings, youth performances, talkbacks, and theater productions. The calendar of theater events can be found at WLRN.org. That's WLRN.org.
And we're back on today's topical Currents after service with veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Del Mieres of South Florida's Canine Advisors. Raphael's dog has patchy hair loss condition. Raphael, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, I have about a 9-year-old chow mix adopted, and before she had, you know, thick black coat, beautiful, like most chows do, and then over the past, I'd say, 6 months, 6 to 8 months, she started to become very patchy, and where the hair has just become basically gray. I took her to the vet. She said it could possibly be thyroid, and I should check her thyroid function, but I wanted to know if that was actually a realistic case, and if it turned out to not be thyroid, what else could be leading to the change in her hair?
Well, Raphael, good question. Given that she started out with a beautiful hair coat and it's diminished in 6 to 8 months, then clearly something about her has changed. It sounds obvious, but a lot of the time we'll look at allergies. But of course, we'd have to investigate: is she scratching? Is she rubbing at her hair, or is it just falling out? I had a case very similar to your dog's. And it turned out that this dog, I remember clear as day, Bailey, a chow mix, just started losing all her hair. She'd been to 4 veterinarians. She'd been diagnosed with Demodex. She'd been diagnosed with allergies. I worked it up from scratch by actually checking her her thyroid, just like your veterinarian did. This dog was thyroid deficient. This dog also turned out to have a disease called Cushing's, which is a cortisol excess. It's basically where the adrenal is producing too much steroid in the body.
Yes.
And in addition to that, she had horrendous allergies. And of course, the allergies didn't come forth until I controlled the Cushing's, which removed the steroid from her body that had been self-medicating her against allergies. And literally, it took addressing those three aspects, basically getting her on a limited ingredient diet to which she was not allergic, getting her on medicine for her thyroid, medicine for her Cushing's, and my God, this dog bloomed, blossomed into a full-haired chow, beautiful to behold. It was fantastic. So what I'm getting at is, when you're tackling a skin situation, you have to be very scientific, very systematic, work through the possibilities one at a time, deal with the possibilities, but what you might find is that your dog has several things going on at the same time, and she needs to be in the hands of a veterinarian who can work through that process and not give up.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much.
Okay, no thanks, problem. Raphael. Okay, now we've been talking a lot about dogs. Let's talk a little about cats. This is Patricia, and aggression in cats. Okay, Patricia, you're up.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for waiting.
I have 3 cats, and they have integrated very well together. And then friends moved in on their boat in the canal behind my house, and after a little while adopted a kitten. One of my cats had fallen in love with them when they arrived in their boat and was visiting them on their boat. And the new kitten and this particular cat, Falcon, have been clashing ever since. And they tried an electric fence. They put a collar on their cat to try to set up a different territory, I think was the idea. But now Falcon, my cat, has decided to go back onto the boat and sort of invade her territory and eating her food when he can and getting very aggressive with her every time she leaves the boat. I'm wondering how to work with this.
Okay.
Is your cat going on the boat when the people are on the boat?
Yes.
Okay. So why not discourage your cat from going on the boat? Would that take care of the issue?
They do discourage when they're there.
Okay, without electricity.
Right. Yeah, they just clap their hands, yeah, and you know, and tell him no and get him off the boat. But
so your cat at that point, is that okay? Meaning, like, does your cat do that again? If they do that, then your cat does it again, right? So the discouraging part should be a little bit to a greater level. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we may use an air horn when we see the cat coming towards the boat, whether it's, I'm not sure how the setup is there, a pier or however it's set up, but
yes,
a dock perhaps. When we see the cat coming into that area, blow the horn very quickly. There's a number of sprays that they have to kind of keep the cats away. Some of it has to be with like cat pee spray. And when you spray that in the areas that are closer to perhaps a lawn or closer to the beginning of that dock, a lot of times the cat's not going to want to go any further than that area. So that's also a more organic solution.
Would that, though, kind of prevent their cat from leaving the dock area as well?
Probably not, because their cat's going to leave the dock area when they leave the dock area, correct? Or otherwise the cat usually stays with them in the boat?
Yes. I mean, the cat is trying to come out into the backyard and explore around and, you know.
The kitten is?
Well, now she's 6 months old now. So, yeah, she's still a kitten. And we all want her to be able to feel free to come out to the grass and not be stuck.
Right.
Okay. You can try some of these different solutions and perhaps contact us perhaps after the show so that we can talk about more specifics and see if we can give you some more specific advice.
Okay. Right. Okay, yeah. Patricia. Thanks so
Thank
much
you.
For
I'll
calling.
Do that.
Okay.
Thanks.
And let's move on to, I'm sorry you've been waiting so long, but Melissa, her dog barks when on a leash. Melissa?
Hi. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So, my dog is named Otis, and he's a 10-pound schnoodle. He's very well-trained in the house, knows many tricks that impress many different people. And when he's at the dog park, he's totally fine when he's off the leash. He plays around with some dogs. He really doesn't mind them. The only time we have a problem is when we're taking him out for a walk, and he sees a dog further than he can actually go up to him. So maybe across the street he has pretty good distance, so he could see it pretty far away. And as soon as that happens, it's like he goes into this kind of crazed mode where all he wants to do is go up to that dog. And until he does, he will whine and cry and scream. And, I mean, it's kind of counterproductive because I keep telling Otis, there's no way that any other dog is going to come up to you when you bark like crazy and you act like a crazy dog. So.
Right.
But as soon as he goes up to a dog, and I feel really bad because some of the owners especially don't want to bring their dog around mine if they don't know Otis.
Okay, let's see what Adele has to say, Melissa, because we're just about out of time.
Go ahead.
Real quick here, this is going to come down to classical leash management. That's what this is, leash management. When he sees a dog, he's going to pull towards the dog. You're likely going to try to pull him away. It's going to cause him to not only pull, but maybe howl, bark, lunge, and do all these other behaviors that take them down that track. So basically, you know, in working with a trainer doing leash management with distractions, including other dogs, you would be able to resolve this issue rather quickly.
Okay, and that's with high-quality treats or something to that effect? Because we've tried a lot.
Well, there's a number of different ways that we can get it done with. But generally, you want to, at the very beginning inside the house, be able to get your dog's attention at any time that you like with a quick little sound and not using your dog's name. When the dog looks at you, you praise him. So you actually use that as a conditioning process when you're going to work with the distraction of other dogs as well. The other thing is just learning how to keep that clip hanging and the leash loose. So the leash needs to be loose. If the dog takes off, you got to be able to turn around. Sometimes we'll cradle them, like I mentioned before, under the belly to be able to turn the dog around towards you and then drop the leash again and then praise him. By dropping the leash, I don't mean dropping it from your hands, but rather dropping the pressure on the leash. Again, something that is easier to be shown than to actually explain, but it is a rather easy behavior to resolve.
Okay, Melissa?
Thank you.
All right, great. Thanks for calling. All right, I want to give out contact information for the doctor and for Adele because we're not going to get to any more calls. Matt, so sorry, in Fort Lauderdale, and Don in Fort Lauderdale, another Don in Fort Lauderdale. Dr. Kupke is S-C-A-C, that's S like Sam, C-A-C, at SableChaseAnimalClinic.com. And Adele is E-D-E-L at the letter K, the number 9, advisors.com. And Andrea, I'm so sorry we didn't get to you either. And so if you have any questions further, you can get in touch with them. They'll be very happy. And I see their answers. They always answer. So feel free to get in touch with Adele and Dr. Kupke. And that's Topical Currents for this Tuesday. We thank you for joining us. We apologize to those callers and emailers we couldn't address. Thank you, Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall and Adele Mietes of K9 Advisors for your time and for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And our producer is Richard Ives with technical direction from Caroline Brader Watts. Paul Leary is our online producer. Remember, we have free audio archives and downloads from our website, WLRN.org, and more information as well at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program looks at the latest technology in mammography. It's digital tomosynthesis, which provides a 3D image of the breast. We'll visit with Dr. Nilza Kalos of Breast Health Center and Diagnostic Ultrasound. And we hope you'll join us then. Again, I want to give the emails for Dr. Kupke. It's S like Sam, C-A-C, at SableChaseAnimalClinic.com. And Adele, E-D-E-L, at the letter K, 9advisors.com. Stay tuned for Here and Now from NPR News. Bonnie Berman, hoping you have a great day. Thanks so much for joining us.